One part of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim that sometimes gets a little bit lost in the shuffle, a detail that we sometimes forget, is that we focus a lot on the let my people go, on the request that Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron HaKohen have to go to Paro and ask him to let Klal Yisrael, let the entire slave nation go. But to go where? If you look carefully at the Chumash, initially they're not really asking to be freed forever. They're asking to go on some sort of holiday, some sort of journey to somewhere in the desert to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. And they negotiate back and forth. How's this going to work? What exactly are you asking for? What exactly do you need? Who needs to come? And there seems to be some sort of disconnect in the discussion between Moshe Rabbeinu and Paro. Because Paro says, okay, you want to go serve the Ribbono Shel Olam? You want to go serve your God? Miva mi aholchim. I want to know who's going. Vayomer Moshe. Moshe says, who's going? B'narenu v'zkenenu nelech. Our young, our old. B'vanenu b'vnosenu. Our sons, our daughters. B'tzonenu v'vkarenu nelech. Even our livestock. Kichag Hashem l'anu. Because this is a great festival for God that we are going to have. And Paro responds, no, it's not going to work that way. Lochein. L'chuna ha-gavarin v'ivdu es Hashem. If the men want to go to serve God, gezuntahet. Ki osa atem v'akshem. That's what you really are looking for. V'ayigarish osameis p'nei paro, when they throw him out of the palace. What exactly is going on in this conversation? Paro tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you know why you should send the men? Ki osa atem v'akshem. Because that's all you're really asking for. Where did Paro get the idea that that's all Moshe Rabbeinu is asking for? Moshe Rabbeinu was not only asking for that, he was asking for everybody. What does it mean, ki osa atem mevakshim? You're only asking for the men to come. And also, what's the lashon, mi va mi haholchim? Right, shouldn't it just be, mi haleich? Who's going to go? Or, better yet, mi yeleich? Who will go? Mi va mi, who and who haholchim are the goers? A very, very strange lashon. What exactly is going on in this conversation? I saw several years ago in a beautiful Sefer, Sefer Yalkut Lekach Tov, where he suggests the following approach from the author of the Kometz HaMincha. He says that there's really a fundamental dispute in philosophy, in religious philosophy, between Moshe Rabbeinu and Paro that's happening over here. You see, from Paro's perspective, religious worship is supposed to be done exclusively by the clergy, by people who've achieved some sort of religious status. The religious leadership goes and they sacrifice at the temple, and the women and the children stay home, far away from any sort of religious service, official religious service. And what's Paro's taina? Miva mi aholchim, go look around. Look at how everyone else worships. Who do you think runs to the temples and the mosques? It's not the women and the children. It's not mi yelech, because he's not saying, who are you going to send? He's saying, look at how people worship. That's what I expect you to do. And Moshe responds, no, not in Judaism. We believe that the women and children are also important in this experience. Even more important. Binareinu first, and then bizkeneinu. And that's a uniquely Jewish idea. Why? Ki chag Hashem lanu. When we have a holiday, our holidays are not celebrated away from our families. V'samachta b'chagecha means together with your wife. You're misamech your wife with what makes her happy. You're samech the children with what makes them happy. And everyone experiences the simcha together. When we have a simcha, when we have the ability to celebrate and to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam, we want to give our children that experience also. And we don't want to lock our women out from that experience either. A unique idea. Now, why are the children so important to the service of the Ribbono Shel Olam? And in fact, if you think about it, I forgot to mention this. That's what Paro is saying at the end when he says, Ki osa atem mevakshim. You're going to do religious worship. What do you need kids for? They just get in the way when you're doing religious worship. What do you need women for? Osa atem mevakshim. If it's really a day of worship, so good, go. Let the men go. They're the only ones that do anything anyway. They're the only ones that have the experience. And the response is no. The Chag is for Hashem, but it's also for us. Chag Hashem, but it's Lanu. We have to be happy. And Ashari below Isha, Shari below Simcha. Someone who's without a wife, without their wife, then they don't have Simcha. We experience Simcha in its most profound way when we are with our families. The children may not do much in terms of religious worship, but they'll gain from being in such an atmosphere. That's how we raise the next generation of children who are of the Hashem. Gemara in Bava Basra tells us the genesis, the development of yeshivas. Bava Basra daf chaf aleph, b'tchila mi sheyesh lo av melamdo. It used to be someone who had a father to teach him, so the father would teach him Torah. Mi she'in lo av, lo haya lama Torah. And if he didn't have a father, so he wouldn't learn Torah. Hiskinua hayumoshivim melamdei tinokos pirushalayim. Then they said, you know what, that's unfortunate. Someone who didn't have a father to teach them Torah would end up not learning at all. That's terrible, it's tragic. So what did they do? They set up teachers of young children in Yerushalayim. My drosh, where did they get the idea of setting it up in Yerushalayim? Ki mitzion teitze Torah, devar Hashem in Yerushalayim. Pasuk says, Torah comes from Tzion. What better place? Then they realized, wait a second. If the melamdei tinokos are only in Yerushalayim, someone who has a father to bring him to Yerushalayim will learn Torah. And if his father can't bring him to Yerushalayim, or he doesn't have a father to bring him to Yerushalayim, so that kid still won't be learning. Ad shebar Rabbi Yeshua ben Gamla v'tikein shiyum al-shivim melamdei tinokos b'chol medino v'chalir. Until Rabbi Yeshua ben Gamla came along and he said, you know what? We're going to set up melamdei tinokos in every single city. They're going to be accessible everywhere. Children will always be able to learn. What does Tosos say over there? Tosos asks, what was the Havamina? To set up only in Yerushalayim? You're not going to set up a place to learn anywhere else? Why would they think that it's more appropriate to set up a place to learn in Yerushalayim rather than in the place that's perhaps most accessible to people? And Tosos says, no, there was something special about Yerushalayim that was an ingredient for success in Chinuch. Lefisha hayaroa kedusha gedola v'kohanim oskim ba'avoda hayimechavin libo yoseh liros shamayim v'lilmot Torah. Unbelievable message, Tosa says. If you want to be mechanech a child, it's not enough to just teach him Torah. He needs to be in an atmosphere of kedusha. He needs to see what it's like when kohanim are running to do the avoda. He needs to see what an environment that's full of Kedusha feels like, what it looks like. He needs to hear the sounds of Kedusha, see the sights of Kedusha. He needs it to come into him through every pore of his body, not just from words that the Malamed is teaching him. And when a child is in such an atmosphere, he's going to be in a unique position to succeed. Rav Rosenzweig Shlita gave a talk many years ago, not so many years ago, on the topic of how to choose a school for your child, and what factors to be aware of. And obviously there are many factors. But he pointed out the number one factor, is what Tosso says, is the environment, an environment of Kedusha. The way I like to tell people when they talk to me about choosing a school for a child is to say, look at the frumest kid in the class. Is he by definition, because he's the frumest kid, the biggest nerd? The one that the kids make fun of? Or perhaps no. If he's a nerdy kid, maybe he's the biggest nerd. He's the coolest kid. Maybe he's looked at as the coolest kid. But the frumkeit doesn't drag him down. An adaraba. If you find a school, you're lucky enough to find a yeshiva, where the kid who steigs and the kid who grows in Yerushalayim and in Limud Torah is someone who's admired by the other kids. They look up to him. Then you know you're getting closer to an environment of Kedusha. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for an environment where Kedusha is raised on a pedestal. And it's our responsibility not just to teach Torah to our children, but to create an atmosphere of Torah. And Baruch Hashem, the yeshivos, from what I can see, do a pretty good job of this. But the job isn't done at yeshiva alone. It has to be done at home also. Okay, we're all exhausted on Friday night, end of a long week. And we're going to sit down after the Friday night meal. Hopefully we'll keep our eyes awake through the Friday night meal. And then we're going to sit down on a lazy boy or whatever, our recliner after the meal. And we're going to last maybe 3 minutes before we doze off. But we could doze off with a newspaper or a magazine over our faces. Or we could doze off with a sefer over our faces. We're going to be sleeping anyway. Yeah, but for those 3 minutes. And for the child seeing what you fell asleep with. It creates a sense of, if I have 3 minutes, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go and I'm going to learn a little bit. And that's just on the simplest level. But the reality is, sometimes, when children are given an opportunity to thrive in Kedusha, they can do so much more than we actually give them credit for. First of all, they're extremely sensitive to an environment of Kedusha. Kids notice things. One of the members of our shul was just telling me recently that he was away for a Shabbos at a community where in a shul where the decorum, let's just say, is not quite what it is here in North Woodmere. And his 5-year-old son walked into shul, and he walked right over to his father, and he said, "Abba, what are they doing?" And he said, "What do you mean, what are they doing?" He said, "What are they doing here? What are all these people doing in this room?" And he said to his son, "What do you mean, they're davening?" And he looks around, and he goes, "No, they're not." Unbelievable, 5 years old. Looks around at a shul, sees people schmoozing, this, that. This isn't davening. They're not davening. Kids pick up on these things. So the environment is paramount. A child has to know what davening looks like. When we choose a place where we're going to daven, how many times have I heard people looking for a better place to live, a better place to daven, because their kids are getting older? Yeah, we have to do it when our kids are younger also. Find a place that's the right environment. On the other hand also, not really on the other hand, but to go along with this, I always assumed in yeshiva that when I have children, my children will start coming to shul as soon as they know how to daven with kavana. Otherwise, I'll keep them out of shul. What are they going to do there? I don't want to train them to be in shul not to do anything. No. Years ago, my oldest son, who's now 10 years old, was about 3, I guess. And I was the assistant rabbi in Shari Tefillah. My son was maybe 3, 4 years old. And Rav Shechter was scholar in residence. So Rav Shechter came over to me after davening and he said, "Where's your son?" I said, "Rebbe, he's 3 years old." He said, "So?" I said, "Well, he can't read yet." He said, "Well, can he sit quietly?" I said, "Yeah, he's actually pretty good at sitting quietly." He said, "Well, then he belongs here." It's something I probably should have figured out on my own, right? But if a child is able to sit there and drink in the atmosphere of Kedusha, see what a tzura of davening looks like, then he should be there. Obviously, if he's, and every kid is different, some kids at older age, some kids, if he can't sit and he's going to disrupt the davening, there's no shaila. There's no shaila. He doesn't belong there. And for some children, maybe 5 minutes. For some children, 10 minutes. For some children, a half hour. We have to figure it out. But to be exposed to Kedusha, in whatever way we can expose them. And not only that, but this is the point I wanted to make before. Sometimes we don't give our children enough credit. We think, they can't do anything here anyway. But they really can do a lot more than we think. Sometimes kids can contribute a lot more to Avodas Hashem than we really give them credit for. The Torah demands Avodas Hashem in every time, every place, and at every age. The same Torah that's learned by the greatest Gedolim is learned by our youngest children. Remember, one of my close friends told me, his father is a very prominent Rav, and he told me that his son did something clever when he was 5 or 6 years old. Something that showed he had a sharp mind. So what does he do? He calls up his father right away and says, "You're never going to believe what your Einikle did, what your grandson did. He had such a cute line, he said something so smart." And what did the grandfather say? "Quick, take out a Mishnayis. You need to start learning with him. If he's so sharp, use it for something. Learn Mishnayos with him. He's ready to absorb. Obviously, this has to be balanced with the issue of pressuring our kids too much. We can't expect them all to be the Vilna Gaon. But a lot of times, you just start learning with them. First of all, very often, they're eager to learn at this age. And that's not going to always necessarily last into the teenage years, to be eager to learn with dad. But you start learning with them, and you'd be amazed at what they can absorb. Girsa d'Yankasa is such a powerful thing. You know, think about it. How many of us could name every single Disney character we learned at a very young age? Is there any reason we shouldn't also be able to name every single Tana? It just has to be presented with the right excitement. It has to be something that's chashuv in our homes. Girsa d'Yankasa is something that never leaves us. When was the last time we chazered over those Disney characters and we still remember them? It stays with us for a long time. I'm reminded of the story Rabbi Yaakov Haber told me a while ago, that someone once asked Rav Schechter, they noticed Rav Schechter in his notes kept on making references to the Chazanish in Taharos. And the guy who was working on his notes, I guess for publication of something, said, "What's with the Chazanish in Taharos? You're always quoting it." And Rav Schechter said, "Well, when I was a little boy in Philadelphia, there was a man in the community who was a childhood friend of the Chazanish. And when the Chazanish came out with his Sefer and Taros, he sent it to this man, because the man had written him a letter, he asked the Chazanish to daven for him for a Refuah Shleima, whatever, long story short, he sent a copy of his newest Sefer, the Chazanish and Taros, to this man. And the man didn't really know how to learn that well. He certainly wasn't holding by Chazanish and Taros. What's he going to do with it? So he brings it to the rabbi of the community, Rav Shakta's father, Rav Melech, Zichrono Levracha. He said, "Rabbi, you could probably use the Sefer more than I can." Rav Shakta said his father didn't have such a vast library. He was a Shas and a Shulchan Aruch. There wasn't that many interesting things to read. But the Chazanish and Taros was available. So as a kid, he would always read the Chazanish and Taros. So it was his Girsa d'Yankasa. So now he's a big bucky in Chazanish and Taros. But granted, it doesn't happen all the time like that. We're not all Rav Shakta. But each on our own level, and our children on their own level. It's amazing what the Girsa d'Yankasa is about. It's amazing what a child can do when he's just exposed to the right environment of Kedusha. How much can be accomplished in those formative years. That's exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Paro. Binareinu uviz keinenu nelech. Yes, it's for religious observance, but I don't care mi v'mi holchim. I don't care who goes in other religions. In our religion, it's binareinu uviz keinenu. Our children have to be there. Our wives have to be there. And just to touch on the point of wives also, sometimes people assume that as long as the husband is learning and he's gaining spiritual fulfillment, that the wife doesn't need any more fulfillment than the fact that she's staying at home so that the husband can go out and learn. You have to be sensitive to the idea that our wives also require some spiritual sustenance. And it's not always enough for them to say, "Okay, you're going out for a Seder, that's enough spiritual sustenance for me." Okay, there are some women like that. But we have to be careful, we have to be sensitive, and we have to be aware. And if it means saying, "You know what, maybe you can go to the shir or to do this chesed project and I'll stay home and bathe the kids and put them to sleep," so, you know, that's what it means. We have to make sure that our entire family is experiencing Kedusha. In the house and outside of the house when possible. To always be experiencing that atmosphere of Kedusha. So that our own homes could become the fulfillment of Ki Mitzion Tzei Tzei Sora, Udvar Hashem Yerushalayim.